What's up, everyone? You're listening to Sincerely Angie Podcast, and I'm your host, Angie. Thank you so much for tuning in, and welcome to my little gumbo pot. Please be sure to rate and subscribe wherever available, and don't forget that you can download any of your favorite episodes for offline listening. You can always find any information needed on today's episode in the show notes. And for further info, such as social media handles like Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, you can visit SincerelyAngieM.com. This is Sincerely Angie, and you're listening to Sincerely Angie Podcast. No, wait, let me start that over. Because okay. I'm not Sincerely Angie. I am Angie, but you're listening to Sincerely Angie Podcast. Hey, y'all. I'm here with my good buddy, the awesomely talented, and I'm using his words now. Listen to his podcast. I'm going to keep going. And his guests, they're awesome. This is Eric Lewis.
Thank you.
Hi, Eric.
Hey, y'all. How are y'all?
That's my buddy.
Yeah.
He's awesome. He really is, though. He's a great friend to have, and he's wonderful. So tell people who don't know you who you are and what you got going on.
Okay. Well, I am Eric, like the infamous Angie said, from the I'm Gonna Keep Going podcast. I've been podcasting for about, off and on, for about 5 years or so, but mainly consistently, and that, y'all, I'm sorry.
I'm not even that's my on phone. Point. Oh, okay.
That's he my phone. It. I'm going to have to see. This is the beauty of having an Apple Watch or any type of smartwatch, because I could just immediately say, "Bam," and "Bam," and it's going to immediately hang up. The beauty of Apple, an iPhone.
I got a Galaxy Watch. But I can do that. I think. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you can. Yeah, I mean, it all works the same.
You rejected and sent a message, basically.
I did.
Okay.
Yeah. I rejected it and I said, "Hey, can I call you later or whatever?" And they're like, "Yeah, cool." So, yeah, thank you for that. we're gonna start this over again.
We are gonna start over again. That's yes, good. Okay. But,
yeah. Okay.
take two,
y'all, and bam. Okay, so. Yeah, I've been podcasting off and on for about 5 years, but I started taking it much more serious back in 2018, and I've been podcasting consistently since then, and overall, it's been a really good experience. I've been talking more about, just mainly about motivation, about what we can do to try to keep people motivated and inspired. Definitely continue to try to raise awareness in certain aspects, whether it be financial, whether it be mental health, whether it be creativity, whatever. And if you've seen any of my podcasts already, you know that the glorious Angie has been on there consistently.
Yes.
Talking that good money talk, okay? Yes. Talking that big money talk. So thank you for allowing me to be on here.
It was high time. We all know that I took a hiatus from podcasting for a while, but I'm back. And in my last episode, I did say that there would be a money episode coming soon, and here it is.
Voila.
My buddy, Eric, he came through with the come through. We always have really great conversations together, and I told him kind of what stemmed from me wanting to talk about it. And on top of catching you all up on everything that I've been doing money-wise, he was like, "Let's do it." He's always down for whatever. So we're here to talk about money. And yeah, so I guess we start at the beginning, right? Since the last time we talked. You have something to say? I'm sorry.
No, I'm just hanging.
Okay.
And I'm just talking. Let me say this, because I'm very appreciative of the money talks, right? And our last podcast episode on the IKG, or the I'm Gonna Keep Going podcast, was all about ownership.
Yes, it was.
That was a series. It's called Ownership. Well, Ownership, right?
Ownership, yes.
And it was mainly about, you know, intellectual properties was one of the episodes. Another episode was about stock. Mm-hmm. And just another one was about saving and just being able to see how much you can save and, like, all these different money challenges that you presented to the people.
Yes.
And I'm just so excited to be able to talk about this again, because it's very important, y'all, to continue to save money, especially now during everything that's happening with the pandemic and things like that.
Yes.
And the job security nowadays is significantly low. Mm-hmm. And you want to be able to have some type of backup system, you know. And so that's why I'm so glad that you have me on.
Yes.
Because I would like to get a lot of information from you, because I know you are the money guru.
Well, 100%. I do believe so myself. I have no formal financial training or anything. I just have life as my teacher. And I've always had a great relationship with money. I have had some pitfalls. The ownership that we talked about was back in November.
It's November
of 2020. I do have the video here on YouTube, as well as the audio is on the I'ma Keep Going podcast. But when it comes to money, it's just something that has always been a thing. You know how you do something so often, or it's just normal to you. It doesn't seem like a big deal. So when I talk about money, I can talk about it as easily as I can talk about eating food, because it's something that just naturally happens. We naturally deal with money on a daily basis, right? Whether it's your debit card, credit card, or whatever,
right?
You're always dealing with money. Either a bill you have to pay, you have to give somebody some money, you're requesting money. Money is always there, so it's always going to be ever evolving. You're always going to need to learn something else. You're always going to need to improve something. You can't just say, oh, I know enough about money, and then leave it at that, because you're going to always need to know more and more about money.
I agree. And what's important, again, nowadays is the fact that everything that's happening, you want to be able to keep a certain level of finances available and always have a backup plan and always be able to get yourself out of certain scenarios. So
yes,
that's why we're here today to talk more about some of the things that you can possibly do, some of the things you should be doing, and some of the things you may not have even known that you can do.
Yes.
So, yeah, we here for it.
We are. And as you can see, I don't have any notes with me. I'm just going to go straight off the dome. We're just going to have a conversation. And I'm just going to tell you the things that I've done. Eric may jump in and tell you the things that he's done. And we're just going to go from there, because I don't want money to seem so far-fetched for people. I never want people to feel like, oh, let me take notes. And, oh, what's that word? And let me go Google that. And what does this mean? I want it to be natural so that everybody can understand that it's not something that you need to be afraid of.
Right.
You know, people throw out a lot of big words, and they throw out a lot of different terms that people don't understand. And they're like, I don't have time. I've heard of Roth IRAs before, but I don't know what that is. So you have to make it simple for people. And that's what I try and do whenever I talk about money. So yes, I am still saving. Money challenges, those are always going to be a thing for me, because I find that they are super successful, because you can have a money challenge here for something and a money challenge there for something else, and it just challenges you to not just hold yourself to doing one thing as far as saving goes. So
here's another thing too. I'm glad you mentioned that about the stigma of the word money, right?
Mm-hmm.
We all hear the fact that the money is the root of all evil, right?
Yeah.
And we all hear that, understandably so, you know, you would want to think that. But ultimately, is money really isn't the root of all evil. In fact, money is the one thing that you need in order to survive.
Yeah.
So it's your management of money.
Yes, it is.
Which can be is what I consider the root of all evil, right? And so you want to be able to create a much better relationship with money and with finances and with just learning. And the biggest component, like you said about the person talking about Roth IRAs,
mm-hmm.
they may not know anything about it. Like, oh, I don't want to hear about that, because that's whatever. But at the end of the day, you may want to know about that, because you're going to be 60 one day.
At some point you
right.
will be, yes.
At some point you're going to be 60, you know,
yes.
and you're going to be at an age where you're going to have to make harder decisions about your life and about your lifestyle.
Yes.
So the question you should ask yourself is, when I become 60, will I be well enough to where as I can just say, you know what, screw it, I can kick my feet up and do and go wherever I want?
Right.
Or are you going to be the one saying, okay, I need to go apply for this job at Walmart?
Yes.
You know? And nothing against the people who apply.
At all.
Not at all. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, having a much better relationship with your finances and with money, it will always be a much better opportunity for you to be able to continue on your lifestyle and continue on building and you know, and just continuing to live a certain life that you have and enjoy the life that you have instead of stressing. So
absolutely. There is a small correction. It's for the love of money is the root of
all
evil.
Yes, the love of money, right.
But it still goes one and the same. Even if you take the word love out and you strictly go off of that, yes, that saying can go exactly with what you were saying.
Right.
You really do. It's money management, and your relationship with money is the most important thing that you can have.
Right.
I read a quote. I don't remember who it was by, but he said, if you save your money now, your money will save you later.
Oof.
And
I like that.
It's amazing because this actually happened to me about a week ago. So I received a letter in the mail from my car company where I got my car. And there's a scarcity with cars nowadays. Like, the lots are completely empty because of COVID. Production is down because there's not many workers. So they sent me a letter in the mail telling me how much that they would give me for my current car. And I'm like, they gonna give me that much for my car? Like, I'm ready to go get a car right now. Like, the amount that they were gonna give me.
Really? How much? So, I mean, was it up there? Was it a lot more than what it was worth? Really?
Yeah. Well, when I Kelley Blue Booked it, it's what they suggest, that the price for the how many miles, how old it is or whatever. And my car, I keep my car in great condition. So with the minor cosmetic damages or whatever, you know, rocks hitting certain things. But for the most part, yeah, they were going to give me a nice little bit. So if I had taken what they had would have given me for my car, which I just paid off in December, if they would have given me that, and then I would have gotten a new car that I would have wanted. And if they would have came down on the price, if they would have negotiated what I wanted, I could have went to my savings account and took out the amount, the difference from the car, and just paid it clean off.
Really?
So I did go to the lot. There was no, the car that I wanted was not there. And the guy told me when they were getting new cars in, and he said they're only getting 3 next week. And then a week after that, they're getting 3 more of that specific car.
Wow.
So I really was going to, I was debating, because I'm not that impulsive. So you all should know that I went through some, what should I do here? Okay, what's best? So I debated, do I pay the car completely off with taking money out of my savings? Mm-hmm. And then my next goal would be to focus on replenishing my savings. Do I finance the, let's just say $10,000. Do I finance the $10,000? Now I'm getting a note again, which I paid my car off in December because I didn't want a note.
Right.
So I had to weigh those options. Do you want to get another car note? Do you want to take a chunk out of your savings? But at the end of the day, the point of what I'm saying is that I could have done it because I saved my money. So I hear videos all the time where people say you shouldn't save money and it's stupid to save money. But let's just use that example from last week. If I had not saved money, I would be, let's just say I wanted to consider this luxury. You know how everybody say you deserve luxury?
Right.
What if me going to get another brand new car was luxury to me? Me saving my money gave me the opportunity to do that. So when people tell you not to save your money and it's stupid to save it, I always shake my head like, why wouldn't you save it? So you would tell somebody to invest it first rather than save it. But if they don't know how to save, as I always say in every money episode, if you don't know how to save, how can you invest?
That's true.
It is beyond me.
That is
me.
So true. That is so true. In fact, you'll run across a lot of people who tend to do these debt consolidations and things like that.
Yes, yeah.
But realistically, you're not even really fixing the problem.
Yeah.
You know, you're basically, you're providing yourself a solution to a problem. But the core problem is, how did I get into this position to begin with?
Yes. Yeah.
So you have to fix those traits, those habits first before you can do anything. Fix those habits first. And then once you fix those habits, then you can begin to look at money or a better yet, again, have a better relationship with money.
Yes.
And it can work for you in such amazing ways.
Oh, absolutely.
I do want to kind of go to something that you said earlier about the idea of getting rid of your car and getting into, you know, the different options that you gave. And I guess my question is, well, outside of the fact that you didn't have the one that you wanted.
Yeah.
What was the, let's just say they did have the one you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Would you have pulled the trigger right then and there?
Yeah.
You would have?
Because I weighed the options. My car, the amount of mileage I have on my car versus me getting a new car. And then just thinking in the last 5 years, I will have had 2 brand new cars. And I'm only coming out of my pocket with X amount of dollars.
Okay.
So the way I looked at it was I would have had a 2021 car for less than $10,000 or $10,000. That's just numbers I'm throwing. These are not the actual numbers. But can you picture getting a 2021 for $10,000?
That's true.
You know, a brand new car. Let's just say that was the number. I would have pulled $10,000 out of my savings to pay for a 2021 car. Granted, I would have gotten rid of a car that I had just paid off. But so in 5 years, you've had 2 brand new cars. But are you really out of anything? Like, I'm not losing money because my safety with the brand new car, that's what I feel like. I love new cars just because, you know, there's a safety measure.
Right.
And it's new, you know. And I know that I said with this car that I would wait another 10 years before I got another car. But I'm like, if I have the option to get a brand new car for X amount of dollars, I'm going to do it.
I mean, these are unprecedented times.
Yeah.
You know, people are buying cars, used cars left and right. And the fact that there's a severe shortage of it. I mean, taking advantage of it. I mean, and then not only that, but just the opportunity of being able to have a brand new car paid.
And that was the main thing.
Right.
That was the main thing because I said I did not want a note anymore. So if I could pay it completely off, a brand new car, I owe no man, nobody.
Technically, you would have had no note.
No note.
You still wouldn't have had a note. So
no note. So that would have been perfect for me, no. But I did weigh my options. I am not impulsive at all. And I weighed my options. Where I work, I drive 30 minutes a day back and forth to go to work. So I was just mainly thinking of, you know, the amount of miles that I'm putting on my car going back and forth to work. And then it is a little stretch. Before, I think I was driving 15 minutes to my job. And so the extra 15 minutes, I'm just like, you know, I think a new car would be better. And
right.
Again, my car is in great condition, but I mean, you can't dangle a new car in front of my face. And you know, if that's what I consider luxury for me to just be able to get a brand new car without a note, then that's one of those situations where the money saved me.
The fascinating thing about this is the paid off factor.
Yeah.
That's more fascinating thing about this.
I thank God every day for that.
Right. And the ability to pay it off. Yeah. Not only is the ability to pay it off, but the fact that you had already thought about other ways of getting that money back, of recouping that money that you spent, right?
I did.
So, yes. And that's what we're talking about, y'all, the relationship that you need to have with money.
With money, yes.
You know, because if you can, the fact that you can do that and be like, oh, you know, I may take a little bit of a dive now, but ultimately I know exactly how to get back into it.
Absolutely.
I know exactly how to get back to that level.
Yes.
And I have something brand new to pay to show for it.
Yes.
That's the beauty in it in
really
all of this,
is.
You know? Yeah, 100%.
Okay, 100%. So I'll talk about that a little bit. Since I haven't really dived into it since I have been back recording or anything. So I had my car for a year, and then I got a letter in the mail that there was a discrimination lawsuit against the company that I financed my car through. So when I got the discrimination lawsuit, I'm like, oh, so they charged me a higher interest rate than what I deserve based on my credit score.
Right.
So then I went to a credit union and I refinanced my car, basically refinance and starts a new loan. So I got a new loan. It was a 5-year loan. And again, this was 1 year after I purchased the car in the first place. So I got a 5-year loan now, and my note, I think it went down about $20, which I wasn't tripping. When I was in the office with the lady at the finance company, she said, oh, and there's no fee for early payoff. I said, oh. What she actually said was, she said, I already know what you're going to ask. She said, there's no penalty for early payoff. I was not about to ask that. I had no idea it was even a thing.
Right.
And so I said, I'm so glad you said that.
That's
I had
good.
No idea.
That's good.
So that went in the back of my mind. And so I'm like, wait a minute. I can pay this car off early. But before, I just was going to make monthly payments, but add just a few more dollars to the monthly payments. Well, when she told me that, I went to crunching the numbers. And I'm like, I'm going to pay this car off 2.5 years early.
Right.
And sure enough, I wrote down a schedule. I wrote down how much I was going to pay per month. And it happened. I paid it off 2.5 years early. So what happened, just to jump off of that really quickly, I was watching it wasn't on YouTube. I think I saw a clip of it on Instagram. A lot of people kept sharing this clip of a video where these people were talking and they were saying that it's stupid to have two jobs or work more than one job to get by or something like that. Something to the effect of that.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah. I've seen that too.
I immediately, I'm like, why is that stupid though? If you have a goal, because I'll call myself a goal setter. You've set goals before. Most of us set goals before. So if you set a goal for something, you're probably going to do whatever needs to be done to reach that goal, right?
Right.
So at the time when I was thinking about paying my car off, I was working two jobs. I had my main job, which paid all of my bills, and my second job was money that was going straight into savings.
Okay.
So this money, the job was optional. Now, I didn't need it. The money was going strictly into savings. That's when I started thinking, okay, well, I could pay my car off with the money that I'm making from the second job. All of the money that I'm making, I could just double up on my payments. So then I revised my little worksheet. Okay, so now I'm not going to pay, instead of the $400 I'm supposed to pay, I'm going to pay $600. So then I revised it again and I said, instead of $600, I'm going to pay $800. So I literally doubled up on my payments. And that's how I paid my car off early. It was no tricks, no schemes or anything. And it didn't break the bank. Number one, I was working two jobs. I still had a life. In March, I'm going to vacation. Those are things that are going to happen. I was not killing myself working the two jobs. I had zero off days, but I still had a life because one job I would get off at 4 p.m., the other job I would get off at 9 p.m., depending on the day. So I still was able to operate life. You know, right. I was not killing myself. And I think that's what the person in the video was alluding to, that you're basically killing yourself instead of having passive income. And by no means am I saying go get a second job if you have passive income. What I'm saying is do what works for you. At the end of the day, that's all we have to do. We have to do what works for us. And I'm hands down to any guru, any financial expert, any financial advisor who tells you what you should do. I have no problems with that. I also think that people need to understand their own personal situation and use what works for them versus somebody telling you, oh no, don't do that. That's stupid.
Right. I agree with you. I mean, I believe, first of all, there's nothing wrong with having a second job. I mean, I don't think, as long as you have a specific task or a specific goal, like you said, as long as you outline what your goals are, you outline exactly what needs to be done and the length of time you feel is going to take to do it, then you do it.
Yeah.
I mean, you get a second job. The goal is to figure out exactly how to be able to get to the end zone, right?
Right.
It's like a math problem. There's various ways of getting the answer, right?
Yes.
But as long as you get to the answer, and as long as the answer is absolute, then you're good.
Yeah.
So, in fact, I often listen to other, I guess, financial gurus or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
There's one, you know, famous guy on YouTube and podcasting and things like that. He has a radio show. I'm not going to say his name because we're not paid by him. So, but I'm pretty sure you know who I'm talking about.
Uh-huh.
And so one of his famous lines is beans and rice and beans, mm-hmm. right? You know, your goal, if your goal is to get to a certain level or a certain point in life where, you know, you need things paid off, you want your credit card debt paid off, you want, you know, you want that house, you want, you know, the new car or whatever, then you do what you need to do in order to be able to get where you need to get.
Right.
Working a second job is not a problem. I don't think that's a problem.
It's not a problem.
And I'm pretty sure the people that you were talking, well, the same video I saw that you're speaking of, you know, a lot of it may have been more in line with becoming an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Like, you know, having supplemental income, having passive income, things like that or whatever. You know, the focus is to break free of corporate America. And again, I get that.
Absolutely. And I get the narrative. 100%.
Right. I get the narrative they were speaking about. But some people don't want to be an entrepreneur. Some people just want their debt paid.
They really do, yeah.
You know, some people just want their car paid off. Mm-hmm. Some people just want to get from under this credit card debt or this loan debt or whatever.
Yes.
And you shouldn't really poo-poo on the people who choose to do that. I don't want to say poo-poo. You know what I want to say.
You shouldn't.
You shouldn't have to do that. You shouldn't disregard the people who are actually out here looking for a second job, you know, and tell them, no, that's not the way to go. The way to go is to become an entrepreneur.
Right.
When truth be told, if you're an entrepreneur, you're gonna probably work almost more than double the amount of hours that you work at a regular job.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
In order for it to be, at least in the initial stages.
Absolutely.
In order for it to become successful.
Right.
So you want to be able to create some type of agenda for yourself. And with creating that agenda, if it's working a second job, do that.
Yeah.
If it's starting a business, do that. If it's going, you know, borrow it from your cousin them, do that.
Yes.
You know, whatever you need to do to get to the goal, get to the end goal. And yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I don't think having a second job is a bad idea.
I don't. And we both understand where they were going and what they were saying.
Right.
And we understand it is better to have passive income money while you're sleeping, basically, instead of working a second job. But if somebody has a goal in mind, you should not bash them for going about it whatever way they went about it. There is no cookie cutter method to money. There really isn't. You do what works for you. Give us 1 second. We'll be right back. Let us insert a sponsor here and we'll come back and finish this conversation.
Hey, to all of my online shoppers or anyone looking to rack up some extra bucks, Rakuten, formerly Ebates, is the place for you. If you're shopping online, why not get cash back in the process? And if you're looking to make money on the side, all you have to do is refer a friend. When they spend their very first $25, they'll get $10 free and you'll get paid for referring them. Who doesn't like free money? You can get paid with a big fat check or you can get paid through PayPal. You can find a link to get started in the show notes, or you can always visit sincerelyangiem.com under the promo tab. Happy shopping and let's start racking.
All right, you guys, welcome back. Welcome back. And we were discussing passive income, and I think you should live and let live, as I've said many times before on a podcast. I really just believe in giving people the space they need to be them. You know the saying, how they say, you have to meet people where they are.
I agree. I agree with you.
And I think that applies to every aspect of life.
Yeah. I mean, it really does when you think about it, because ultimately you need to be able to understand the challenges that people have, right? Yes. When it comes to finances or anything in life, you need to be able to understand exactly where they are, and not necessarily stoop to their level, but just meet them where they are. Because some people may not be able to save $10,000. Oh, speaking of which.
Yes. I know where you're going with this.
You know where I'm going with
this?
I do. We talked about this a while ago, and yes. I it just came to me. $10,000, and I think you said six or eight months.
I'm gonna say 8 months just to give myself some wiggle room. I've done it three times already. So the first time was 1 year and 2 months.
Okay.
The second time, I want to say it was a year exactly. And then the last time was between 6 and 8 months that it took me to save. Now, as I mentioned earlier, I do multiple savings goals at one time. And I swear by my notebook.
She really does, y'all.
Everything. You can't see it here, but I do have a money video on my YouTube channel, or on this channel, where you will see under the playlist, I think quarantine, it's a savings video, and I show you how I write everything down and how I compartmentalize it and how I just kind of break everything down. So how I save $10,000 is basically by predicting my income. I'm aware of my bills and how much I pay in bills per month.
Okay.
So I can subtract what I predict that I'm going to make versus what I believe my bills will be and how much is left over. From the how much that's left over, I take maybe 70 or 80% of that and say, okay, this is what I'm going to save. So let's just say I'm speaking of $3,000 per month, and my bills and everything taken out, I'm left with $1,200 per month.
Okay.
So out of the $1,200, I'll probably save between $800 and $1,000. $800 and $1,000.
Okay.
So that'll leave me with like $200 to kind of just do whatever with, which is usually nothing because I don't do a whole lot of spending. Well, when outside opened back up, I started spending. I think we all did.
Yeah,
I'm not even gonna lie. Right. I was wilding out from January of this year till May, and at that point, I said, "Girl, I am through with you." Like, I had to throw myself away. I was literally spending money.
I think we all did at that time because we were just so excited of getting back out and stuff. You know what I mean?
But also, wonderful things happen for people that I know. So I would send, like, you know, housewarming gifts or something to somebody, you know, if they purchased a house or something like that.
Right, right. Thank you. I did.
He did.
By saving also, which we'll talk about.
And manifesting. You know, you have to have a vision. And that's the purpose of writing it down, so that you can have the vision of what you're expecting. So when I write it down and then I do my subtractions, like I said, if I save about $800 to $1,000 out of having $1,200 to spare, I'm doing really good.
Right.
So just consider that, let's just say $1,000 per month I'm saving. So within my little 6 months, because I usually do a 6 month
evaluation.
Right.
Okay.
And so within the 6 months, I'll strive, if I say $1,000 that I can save per month, then I'll say within that 6 months, I can save $6,000 to $7,000. I give myself some wiggle room. On this particular month, on this particular challenge, we're only 1 month in. But if y'all can't see over there, but there's a little red writing here because I did not meet my savings goal. I wanted to save $1,500. Okay. I only saved $1,300. But again, I go up a little bit more just to give myself some wiggle room when I am saving, just because I don't want to sell myself short because I know what I'm capable of. So this is what I do to get to the $10,000. And $10,000 is usually the easiest goal to get to. One time I was bold and I said, I'm going to do 15. I did not do 15, but I was close to it.
It was close, right. Yeah. Okay.
You know, number one thing is to be disciplined. You have to challenge yourself. And in challenging yourself, you're going to be disciplined. You have to say, no, I can't go out to eat. No, I can't go and buy those shoes that I want. And it's not you denying yourself. You know, there's a bigger purpose at hand. And $10,000 may not be your goal, but it is something to strive for me. And so with me doing that, if I wanted to go and purchase that car, that would be my present to myself, you know, because I was disciplined enough to save.
Okay. So you mentioned earlier that you're disciplined, right? Mm-hmm. So how do you keep that discipline? Because that is the, I would say about 98% of the people who want to save, who want to learn how to save and who want to learn how to manage their finances and stuff. Discipline is the most important thing. Yes. That's the number one issue that a lot of people run into. So how do you, Angie, discipline yourself? And like, what are some of the steps you take to do that?
Well, the first thing is I'm naturally cheap. I am naturally, let me be fancy, I'm frugal.
Frugal.
Very
there you
frugal.
Go. There you go. You're not cheap, you're frugal. There's a difference.
Yes, there is a difference. I'm naturally frugal. And I have a podcast episode where it's called Dear Worth, and I talk about what's worth it to you.
Okay.
And so for me, to save a certain amount of money, to see my savings account at a certain number, to see me being debt-free on my credit report, not having a whole lot of debt, all of that, it creates the discipline. It causes me to say, it's not worth it for me to go and buy these $100 whatever when I know that that $100 could have went towards something else that is much more important.
That's much more important.
So I think it has to do with what is worth it to you. And the balance of knowing your want versus your need. So is it necessary for you to go and spend this money on something that is very temporary, or is it more important to reach that goal that you're trying to reach? Now, by no means necessary. As I said, I vacation every March. By no means am I saying don't live your best life. I'm not saying that, but you have to be smart in the process. When I go on vacations, I already know room and board, that's the hotel and the flight,
right?
All of that, I'm going to spend about $500 or $600, and then when I go to the actual place, I spend about $300 to $500. So each trip I take is about $1,000, and that's nothing, you know. So it really is if it's worth it to you. And if it's not worth it to you for you to save your money, that's going to cause the problems with being disciplined. So I think that the first step with being disciplined is to see if something is worth it to you and to understand your want versus your need.
Right. Okay.
And you have to deal with that first. It all goes back to also your relationship with money. If you have a bad relationship with money, you're just, I'll spend it, I'll get it back. You know, I'm not worried. But then, like we were talking about, like the Roth IRAs, if you're not familiar with it, you don't know about it. And then also if you, let's just, I have a person, I've talked about this before, she wanted to file bankruptcy because she has just like bad credit history. And I said, well, if you file bankruptcy and you haven't fixed your relationship with money, you're just going to end up where you were before. So I think discipline involves you understanding money, knowing money, and understanding what is worth it to you, and then your wants versus your needs. I hope that wasn't confusing.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't at all. In fact, I do want to kind of piggyback on that.
Okay.
Which you said with the person that you spoke with about the bankruptcy. And I, too, had a similar situation. Now, I didn't go into bankruptcy, or I didn't file for bankruptcy, but I had a terrible relationship with money to a point where I wanted to get a car, but I couldn't get the car because my credit was so jacked up, right? And, I mean, I'll be transparent. I was, like, at a 522, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, I mean, no, I'm not shaming anybody who has a...
Because we've been there. We've all been there.
Right, a 500 credit score. Yeah. I'm not shaming anybody at all.
Absolutely.
But I'm just telling my story. And so, went to the place, got the... Well, I didn't get the car simply because they were like, okay, well, you need to put down half whatever the car is worth.
Yeah.
And this car was like, at the time, it was like $17,000. So I'm like, well, I don't have $9,000 just to spend like that or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so, when I went home, I got home or whatever, and I was talking to my wife about it, and she said, well, I mean, you know what you got to do? Clean your credit, you know? And I said, okay, cool, I'll do what I can.
Yeah.
And so I started making phone calls to, like, creditors and stuff like that, which we talked about that on the...
Ownership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the ownership segments. Contacting the creditors, first of all, retrieving your credit report.
Yes.
Obviously, you can go to annualreport.com and you can pull it, or you can even go to Credit Karma now and you can see exactly
what's on there,
right? And so you can start off your relationship with money by seeing exactly where you stand.
Mm-hmm.
Once you see where you stand, then you can start making adjustments
according
to that, right? And so that's what I started doing.
Mm-hmm.
I started looking at the amount of stuff. I mean, I had stuff on there. I had a bill that was $37.
Yes.
that I forgot all about, you know, I forgot all about it. And simply because out of sight, out of mind. So I started looking at all of the different things I owed or whatever. And then I started making payments. I said, you know what? Today is the day I'm going to start making payments.
Yeah.
And I started making payments. You know, again, it took about a good year and a half. Well, it took about a good year for it to go from the 520 credit score to like maybe a 590. Right.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, cool. So I can really start making some progress.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started tackling the small things first, which is the very important thing. If you can tackle the small things first, get those out of the way. Going back to the relations or the conversations that you need to have with the creditors, call them.
Yeah.
Call the creditors directly. Do not, under any circumstances, call the collections agencies.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
No, that's real.
Right?
I would suggest the same thing.
Right. Don't contact the collections agency simply because they only know what was received to them.
Mm-hmm.
And their goal is to get the money out of you by any means necessary. Yep. And here's a little fun fact. If you pay the collections agency, guess what?
That
it still shows up on your credit report.
Yes.
It shows up on your credit report.
I was just about to say, because a lot of people would suggest to not pay off the creditors. Like if you owe somebody money, just let it fall off. Again, what works for you? I tell people, like as he said, the $37, I saw a report that had a $46 like AT&T bill or maybe Sprint or something like that. And I'm like,
here's $50. Right.
Go
here
pay
you go.
That off.
Here like, you go. Right.
So me, I'm the type of person I am. If I did it, if I'm going to own up to it, if it's my debt, it's my problem. I'm not trying to weasel my way out of it. I'm really not. So I'm either going to pay you or I'm going to let it fall off. But for the most part, if you are going to pay it, like he said, contact the person who you actually have that credit problem with.
Right.
Contact them, not the debt collectors. And then also make sure that you do get it in writing if you do a pay for delete. If you pay them what you owe them, make sure that they keep their word in that they're going to delete it. But it's called the pay for delete. And you can do your research, as he mentioned earlier. If you know that you are trying to work on your credit or even on your finances, your relationship with money, you have to do some research on yourself.
Right.
And the first thing to do is to pull up your credit report.
Right. 100%. And that's extremely important when it comes to building their relationship with the money, with their finances. Mm-hmm. Again, what a lot of people don't understand is people say cash is king.
No, credit is king.
Credit is king.
Yes,
okay?
It is.
You hear me? Credit is king.
It is.
Credit can open so many more doors than cash can. And, and the reason why is, now, obviously, if you have the cash to buy something, then obviously use the cash to buy it. But when it comes to financing a home, I would say about a good 99% of the people don't have $200,000+ for a home.
No,
you know, just saving there, right? Yeah. Just sitting there. So, I mean, you can have half of whatever it is, and guess what? They still want to check your credit just to see if your credit worthiness, right?
Yes.
And so, going back to the creditors, a pay and delete. You know, make sure you have in writing that it is paid. And what happens is, whenever you see the collections agency still on there, and you've made the payment, you simply make a phone call to them and say, "Hey, this has been paid in full.
Yes.
Remove it."
Yeah.
I mean, they won't like to hear that, but guess what? They need to honor it. They need to go with it, right?
Absolutely.
And so going back to my story, once I did that, I eventually crawled my way up to like a 620 credit score.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most important things that literally turned my credit worthiness and my relationship with credit around, and this is completely obscure, but I ended up getting an American Express card.
Yeah, I've heard that.
The reason why is because American Express, you owe that.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you spend that month, you owe that exact amount the next month. It ain't no, I'll just pay, you know, the minimum. I'll pay the minimum $20 or whatever. No.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you spend, you owe. And if you don't owe it, they only give you like two chances. I know.
Really?
Trust me. I know. They only give you two chances to get it right.
Really?
Or two or three chances, I would say. Yeah, and then what'll happen is your credit worthiness with them will begin to go down, because initially, whenever you get an American Express charge card, again, they tell you what your power score, well, what your, not your power score, but they tell you what your, basically what your ranking is, right?
Mm-hmm.
How much can you spend? Because typically an American Express charge card has no limit, But there is a certain amount that you can, that you cannot exceed.
Yeah.
And so initially what will happen is they'll start everybody, I think they start everybody off at like about $5,000, right? Mm-hmm. You cannot exceed anything over $5,000. So if you go to Walmart or if you go to Best Buy and buy this $4,000, $5,000 TV, $5,000 and one penny, they're going to count. They're not going to, they're not going to approve it. Yeah, they're not going to approve it.
Wow.
So now, obviously, if you consistently pay your bills on time and things like that, your power ranking goes up. It goes up and goes up and goes up. You know, and again, the more you use your card, the more your power ranking goes up.
Okay.
And so my relationship with money started with that, because at that point, because even when I was still paying off the creditors and things like that or whatever, I still had an issue with paying on time.
Oh, yeah.
That was the problem. Mm-hmm. And so when I got this American Express card, I say, you know what? Because again, this teaches you, okay, you got to pay this crap on time.
Yeah.
If you don't pay this on time, then it's going to look bad on you.
Yeah.
You know, and eventually what happened was I started paying that on time, and then I started paying everything else on time.
Yeah.
And so it's a chain reaction. It is. You know
it
what I mean?
It really is.
It's a chain reaction. And once you learn these different traits, these different models, then you'll begin to have a much better relationship with your finances and be able to get the things that you want. You
absolutely.
Know? So.
And it also spills over. Like you said, with the American Express, and then it helps you with something else. That's how it is with anything. Yep. Like if you consistently do something or you do something and you see great results, you can apply that to another area of your life. So just like with money or with the credit card, let's just use the credit card. You get a credit card, you start paying it off, and then you see your credit score goes up. So now you're looking at your credit score or your credit report. That's like, true. Okay, what else can I get off
That's
of here?
True.
What else can
that
I do?
True.
It really spills over. It's a ripple effect. It's a chain reaction. It starts here and then it spills over into other areas of your life. But that's a good thing, isn't it? I don't think it's a bad thing at all. It's a really good thing.
And here's a funny thing too, like, which is a true thing. By the time you get to like a 700, let's just say the default is 700, mm-hmm. right? You want to get to a 700 credit score.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of where everybody's trying to get to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just like the baseline, right? Obviously, you want to go higher than that.
Yeah.
But the baseline is 700. What a lot of people don't know is once you get to a certain threshold, I want to say it's a 720 credit score, 720 and above,
mm-hmm.
you're basically at the upper echelon of credit, right?
Yes.
You walk different.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
Things just hit different. Like, you can literally walk into a car dealership and say, I want that car right there.
Yes.
And I don't want to have to pay anything down for it.
Yes.
And they'll be like, okay.
Yeah.
I bought my car prior to what I have now. I bought a car in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
My other car got damaged in the flood in Baton Rouge. You know, I miss that car, man. I miss that car. Side note, it was a Mazda 6 that I had. That was my baby. I called her Blackness, right? And she was with me every step of my car, like my brand new car, like, 'cause that was the first car I ever purchased brand new.
Yeah.
So the day I paid her off, I paid off early. The day I paid her off, the very day I paid her off, is the last time I actually ever got a chance to drive that car. And the reason why is because I ended up going out of town.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came back, that's when the flood happened and I couldn't get to my car.
Oh, wow.
My car had been completely flooded. But anyway.
Oh, wow.
Rest in peace, baby.
Oh.
So, but by this time, my credit had already gotten to a point where I was like at a 740.
Yeah.
And I was talking to a buddy of mine, and he was saying, man, you know, you just, man, I know you're going to be in there forever. I'm like, no, I won't.
Mm-hmm.
I won't be in there forever.
Yeah.
I know I won't.
Yeah.
From the moment I walked into the dealership,
mm-hmm.
up until the time I got my car, I went to the dealership that morning before I went to work. I said, I want this car. I went online, did my research. I said, I want this car, and I want it for this price.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we're going to have to check your credit. I said, no, you don't have to do that. Everything is fine. I'm good. I'm already financed.
Right.
I've already gotten credit, whatever.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, we could try to get you a better deal. I said, okay, you know what? Since I've already had my credit checked like a couple days prior,
mm-hmm.
it's all still within that 14-day threshold.
Yeah.
Let me go ahead and run it. Go ahead and run it.
Mm-hmm.
I went to work. They called me back within 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Mr. Lewis, we're going to have something ready for you by the end of the day.
Yeah.
I said, I know.
Yeah.
I know you will. And my point in saying that is that you just walk different.
Yes.
You have a different bravado whenever you're going into the... You have much more confidence whenever you're going into these dealerships. And knowing that you can basically get anything you want off the lot.
Right.
That's why it's very important.
It is.
It's very important, people, to make sure that you pay your bills on time.
Yes.
you begin to get disciplined with your bills.
Yes.
And disciplined with everything else that you need to do. And then once you get to a certain level, a certain threshold, you're not going to want to buy this. You're not going to want to get this credit card because you're going to start taking care of your credit mm-hmm. like it's a newborn.
Yes.
And so am I right with
you
that?
You are. He's absolutely right. It's serious.
It is.
So when you mentioned that about the car and the way that you were going to walk onto the lot and the way that you walked into the lot and the way that the confidence that you had, I'm telling you, when I weighed my options last week for the car, my credit score on average across all platforms, that's FICO and then also just a Vantage credit score, 790 is the average score.
Nice.
So there's a level of confidence there that when huge I go confidence. Onto this
you hear
lot,
me? You hear me?
I'm either going to finance it at the rate that I want or even better, or I'm going to pay for it in cash because I have the option and the ability to do so. But the confidence was there.
Yep.
I was telling my friend, I said, I'm going to the lot. I'm going to tell them, which is why I said, depending on what they would have negotiated with me, because I was not paying a sticker price.
At
it was
all.
Not
no,
going to happen.
Not
going to
happen.
That's a suggested price. Don't let them ever tell you that you have to pay that price on a sticker. No, everything is negotiable.
Right.
So I was going to the lot. I was going to negotiate the price of the car. My credit score is on point, so it's nothing you could tell me. And no, I don't want to finance through your financial company. I'm going to go to my bank and get a check. If I want to go through my bank, get a check and then come back and pay you in cash. Or I'm going to just come back with a cashier's check with my own money. And go from there. But there was a level of confidence that was like, yeah, no, I'm not going to just go in this lot and y'all tell me what y'all gonna give me. I know what I want. I know what I'm gonna get. If I'm gonna finance it, I'm gonna finance it through a credit union or a bank that I'm comfortable with, that I'm in relationship with. My sister she just got a car. And I told her, I was like, girl, just pay more per month, you know, so you could get rid of that car note. She paid, I want to say $87 more, you know, so it could make it even, whatever the number was.
Right.
She made it even. And then they charged her a $13 fee that they're tacking on to the end of her car note because she paid more
early.
Than her.
She's paying early.
She's
oh,
paid
wow.
more than her balance. So after a year, she's going to refinance with the same credit union. We have not a joint, but we use the same credit union, and she's going to finance through them.
Wow.
After a year when she can refinance. I think she told me she has to have the note for at least a year before she can refinance.
Okay.
I'm not sure what the
that
year.
That sounds about right.
Oh,
yeah,
okay. Well, maybe
right.
that's what
yeah.
it is. But yeah, there is a level of confidence that comes when you're taking care of your business. And that number is, it really does mean something. It's the difference between walking on the lot saying, oh, well, I just need a car. And this is the car I want.
Yeah.
And my interest video that I did when I broke down the interest rates, like if you have a car note or anything like that, it literally shows that you can pay $6,000 with one credit score and $1,000 with another credit score. Those aren't the real numbers. You have to go watch the video, but that interest does mean something, and the interest comes from your credit score. So
yeah,
if
it really
you have
does.
A 580 credit score, they're going to tell you, oh, your interest is 6%. But if you have a 700 credit score, they'll say, oh, your interest is 3%.
Yeah.
So 6% versus 3%, you know, that's a huge difference in what you're paying. So,
and believe it or not, it makes a difference.
It does.
That 6% versus 3% makes a big difference.
It really does.
You know, and again, it's just a level of confidence. And then not only that, but you also have to, with a 580 credit score, you know, they're telling you what you should get.
Oh yeah.
Not
sure.
necessarily you saying this is what I want. They're
at
telling you,
all.
No, you got to get this right.
You
here.
Don't have a choice. Basically,
you ain't got a choice.
It's,
right.
It's what they tell you that you can afford or that they are going to be willing to give to you.
Right.
And who wants to live their life where somebody else is dictating what you can or cannot have?
Yep.
Again, when you save your money, and I'm not advocating for everybody to save their money. I do believe that you should have a savings. But when you save your money can save you.
Yeah.
And let's just say if you save your relationship with money can save you because, like he said, his credit score was in the fives. And then it went to the six, and now it's in the sevens, and the next goal is 800.
800. Yeah, and I'm literally knocking on 800's door.
Yeah,
I'm at a seven.
Cusp,
between all three of mine, I'm at right at about a 787. And that's because I just purchased a house.
Yeah.
So it went down a little bit or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
But before I purchased the house, it was like an 805.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. Look.
You didn't tell me that. Congratulations.
I didn't tell you that.
You entered the 800 club.
I was in the 800 club temporarily for like maybe for about 6 months.
But you made it. That's
all
that matters.
I was riding
that's
high,
goal.
I swear.
All in itself. That is a feat. Yes.
But now, you know, I mean, it took a little bit of a tumble because, you know, when I bought my house, I started reevaluating everything at that point. I started reevaluating, okay, so what credit cards do I want? Or do I need to get another credit card? Mm-hmm. Or because the credit cards I've had, you know, I've had them for some time now. Yeah. And I remember one of the episodes that you did where you contacted the banks and you were like, look, can we renegotiate our interest
rate? My interest rate, right? Yeah.
And so a couple of them, one of them did, two of them didn't. So I ended up saying, okay, that's fine. I paid them down. I paid them off to zero. I paid both of those credit cards off to zero. And I ended up purchasing, getting another card where I know I can use. Like, and that's what I did because, I knew during that time I was fine. So I ended up getting another credit card. Mm-hmm. So, and again, it knocked me down a little bit to like a seven. I'm at a 789 now, actually. Yeah. So it knocked me back down or whatever. But I know eventually I'm going to get back up there within the next couple of months.
Oh, absolutely. So,
because everything is about, again, it's about the relationship that you have, and it's about paying the things off.
Yep.
Pay your stuff off, people.
Yes.
Pay it off. Because if you don't, then you can't build that relationship with money like you want to.
And it's a deeper hole you're digging for yourself to climb out of. So not only are you trying to save money and pay your current bills, not only are you trying to live your best life, but you have this debt hanging over your head that's affecting your credit score. So now it's like you got to try and either pay off the debt, wait for it to fall off, or raise your credit score. What if you want to buy a house, or what if you want to buy a car, and they're saying, oh, well, your credit is not, you know, where it should be. Or again, you're leaving your choice up to somebody else to make it for you. And that's never a good idea.
Right. One of the most damaging things to hear, like to your ego, one of the most bruising things to hear is somebody telling you, not yet.
Yeah.
Oh, you can't get it yet. And you know that you have what it takes to get there. You believe this will actually change, you know, your life. And it'll change, you know. But when somebody tells you, oh, well, you can't get it yet. Yeah. You know, it's a bruise to the ego.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
And that was one of the things that's what catapulted me. That's what started me on the journey where I was like, what you mean I can't get it right now? I got, you know, I can pay it. What you mean I can't get it?
Right.
But again, you use that as a lesson and you begin to work on building that credit.
Absolutely.
And building your self-esteem up, building your credit up, building your confidence back. And the only way to do that is to be able to understand what got you there in the first place.
Yes. A couple of years ago, and I've talked about this on podcast episodes before, but my life was up to chance for somebody else to decide. So I did apply for something and they told me that basically I wasn't ready yet, but I chuck it up to God. I don't give the people who told me no at that time, I don't give them any credit. It was nothing but God telling me that I was not ready.
Right.
And then that no really started a snowball effect. It really started a domino effect of me making some changes. At that point was, again, when I started to pay the car off. I said I'm paying it off 2 years early. That was around that time. I started saving multiple different saving goals that I had. I do the $5 challenge every year, and that's where any $5 bill that you come in contact with, you basically put it on the side, you hold it. So you're only spending like ones, tens, $100 bills, and 20s, but the $5 bills, you just put them to the side. So for the first quarter, which was January to March of this year, I saved $255.
Wow.
In $5 bills.
Wow.
The second quarter, which was April to June, I saved $275. Wait, no, I think it's $325.
Wow.
I think it's $325 in $5 bills. And this quarter, we just started, you know, July, we are not finished. But I already knew that this quarter would be a little bit less than that just because of me having to put myself in a corner for timeout for all the money I've been spending.
Right, right.
So I think I only have about $20 that's saved right now with this challenge, with the $5 challenge. So that's one challenge I do. I do strive to save $10,000 each time I do my 6-month challenge, but I usually, within a 6-month challenge, I have what I could actually afford to save. So like I said, like $1,000 per month or something like that. So I have that small challenge. I have the $10,000 challenge. And then a friend and I usually would do some type of challenge to see who could save $900 in 2 months, or who could say, you know, something similar to that. I'll do little mini challenges as well.
Right.
And then depending on who wins the challenge, we decide what that person does with 10% of their money.
Oh,
so
I like
let's
that.
Just say
like
we strive for $1,000. then 100 of those dollars you either have to give to charity or whatever that person says. Hey, no, you need to give it to me, right, or give it to my cousins or give it to my whoever you decide to say. But I you like have that. The option to say what that person does with 10% of that money, I like which that. Is really good. So, yeah,
it is. It really is. And these are the motivating factors you need to be able to continue to build that relationship.
Absolutely.
So let me ask you this. What would you say to the people who hear this and they're like, yeah, I get that. I get it, Angie. I know. I get it, Eric. I gotta build a relationship with money. I gotta do this. I gotta understand that. What do you say to the people who are at that who want to make a change and don't know how to necessarily make a change? That where would they start?
The first thing I always tell people to do is to do an evaluation of your life. Do an evaluation of your income. Do an evaluation of your bills. Do a net worth evaluation so you can see how much you are worth, and that will shake you up. It will shake you to your core. I have a net worth worksheet on my website, sincerelyangiem.com, where it gives you all of the potential things that you can add up to decide your net worth. And when you see that number and how much you're actually worth, if that's not a eye opener or a grinder or something that tells you need to start grinding, then I don't know what is. That's the first place I would say to start. Because once you see, I'm spending way more than I'm making, no wonder I can never save, or no wonder I never have any cash left, because I have more bills than money. And my pastor always said, he said, when you got more bills than you got money, you know, you feel some type of way. And that's really an eye opener. A change
needs to be made.
Oh, absolutely. I did my net worth calculator about 4 years ago, maybe. And when I saw how much I was worth with my assets, my liabilities, everything that I had going on, which now that I'm saying it, I need to redo it so I can see. And you know I have it written down. So from those years ago when I did it to now, I'm pretty sure my number is going to be extremely higher. And I'm going to be proud of my progress. But yeah, when you see how much you're either worth or how much you're actually working with, it's going to shake some tables. It's going to shake some tables,
So, okay, so building, so basically just having a hard conversation with yourself, obviously going to sincerelyangiem.com and printing the budget worksheet
and the network worksheet. And so you can see how much you're worth and what you're working with.
And then just kind of move and shit from there.
It really is a ripple effect after that. After you see those things, you see those numbers, you have no choice, but you can't play blind to it after that. Right. Because it literally is, you're just living your life at some point. But then when you open your eyes to see certain things, you can't unsee it. So you can't unsee that you're spending more than you're making, or you can't unsee that you're only worth $50,000, whatever the case may be. When you look at what you own versus what you owe, and you're in a negative 25 or whatever, you can't unsee that. And if that's not something that kicks you in the butt and makes you start working, then it's just not your time yet. And I think that's usually what it is. It's time-based. Because I've talked to people multiple times about credit and or saving, and I post something about saving, and then years later they'll come back and they say, I need help with this. And it's like, you said that same thing 3 years ago.
3 years ago, right.
But it's when they're ready. And really quickly, before we start to wrap things up and get out of here, but I spoke about this on my last podcast. I love sweets. I have a love relationship, not even love hate. It's a love relationship with sweets. But I went to the doctor and they told me that my cholesterol was a little bit high. And when I Googled what was I digesting or consuming that had like high levels of cholesterol, and it was the sweets and like cakes and ice cream and all the baked goods and stuff that I love to eat. And at that moment I said, my health is more important, so I'm going to cut out sweets.
A change needs to be made.
That's what I did. So it really is up to you. Again, what is worth it to you? Is it worth it for you to have this temporary sweet tooth that you're going to satisfy, or a long life with your family, with your friends, with your loved ones, with your kids, by stopping a sweet? Like, what is worth it to you?
And let me add on to that, too. I want to also say on that, you know, because you're right. You do have to make the determination of, okay, it has to stop right now, right? It needs to stop here. But there are going to be moments where you're feeling very, very discouraged by it.
Yes.
You have got to keep going because
I'm going to keep going.
You got to keep going because, you know, there's no point in writing something down, right? Saying to yourself, this is what I want. This is what I desire. I want to be at this credit score, or I want to have this paid off, or I want to have this done, or whatever by this time. There's no point in doing that if you aren't disciplined enough to do it. And again, I get it. Sometimes people, you know, we have moments. You know, we have moments where it's like, well, damn, I don't, I can't put it in there this week. Yeah. I can't do it this week or whatever. Or I can't pay that bill this week or whatever. I just need a break. Or they say, oh, I just don't see anything moving. I don't see it moving or whatever. You have to keep progressing.
Yes.
You know, when it's all said and done, you have to keep going, y'all, because it's not going to fix itself.
It's not.
It's not, and that's one of the biggest issues. Well, let me not say issues. That's one of the biggest struggles.
Yeah.
You know, in the Black community specifically.
It is. It's,
where
it's sweeping it under the rug.
Sweeping it under
and
the
then
rug.
When you trip over the rug, you wonder why.
Right.
Because you put everything under the rug. You
right.
kept putting it off and putting it off, and the pile keeps getting higher. You have no choice but to trip over it.
Right, right. And let me say this. It's not just Black, the Black community. But I only see what I know, right? I only know what I see, I should say.
Yeah.
And with the black community or whatever, that's how we was raised. That's how I was brought up.
Yeah.
I was brought up like, oh, it'll get paid, or it'll drop off in 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry about that.
Yeah.
But what they haven't told you is that now these creditors have gotten smarter too.
Oh my goodness.
They've
yes.
gotten smarter.
Oh my goodness. I mean, we can go on and on for days. They have gotten smart. I was listening to this girl on YouTube who she's a loan officer. And she was saying that you can pay somebody to remove everything off your credit report. And you can pay, what are they called? Credit repair counseling.
Yeah.
You can pay somebody for that. But certain companies, like when you do go and get your credit ran, they can still see certain things. And if they see that so many things have been removed in a short amount of time, they'll deny you because they know what route you just took.
Yep.
And you mean to tell me I didn't pay somebody $1,000, however much credit repair people charge, but I paid you this money to take all of this off, and my score, number one, it hasn't been affected yet. It hasn't changed. I still have bad credit. Like, they can still see what was just taken off. Like, so what is the purpose? The purpose is to just really do the work yourself and not do quick and easy. Because like he said, these people are getting smart and they're making changes, just like with everything. And this is way off topic, but you know how everything is happening with the stock market now, with the shorting that they're
yep.
doing.
The short selling, yeah.
Stocks are going to be forever changed in the future, the yep. way you can do certain things, because of how these people who are up there have really lost money.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to change things because they know that there's a way that I'm not going to say lesser, the novices, the retail investors. The hedge funders and the people who are up there, they are losing money. So us people who are the retail investors or what are they called? Retail?
Yeah, investors? The retail investors, yeah.
Listen, these people are going to change because we're getting smarter. And like I said at the very beginning of this, and I guess that's what should be the beginning of everything, is that you really, really, really have to do the research, do the work, and money is ever changing. The topic is always... There was a coin shortage last year. We haven't heard anything else about the coin shortage, but what if there was a time, or there is going to be a time, when we're strictly digital everything?
Digital. Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have to change with that. There's not going to be a $5 challenge again. And one of my most popular blog posts is Saving Small. I did this when I was just on Tumblr before I had Sincerely Angie or anything. And I still get likes on that and reblogging on my Tumblr page is still up,
right.
But I still get likes and reblogs on that post today. It's popular because
it's effective, right?
Saving Small, and I'm going to try and repost it. But if you go to Sincerely Angie, it is under my budgeting tab, Saving Small. This is where I very first started saving, is when in my bank account, if my account has $713.26, I would save the $13. I would move that $13 into my savings account, and I would just keep the $700 in my checking account. Or I would just maybe move the $3 and whatever change into my savings account and keep $710. Whatever the case may be, I did it. Every time I checked my account, if I saw that there was like an off number, I would just transfer that into savings. And there are apps that do that.
Right.
They round it off, or they'll kind of just take a few cents or dollars here and there. There are apps that do it for you. But me, I'm in control of my money. I don't really trust the app to do that. I'm not knocking it, because I think it's a great idea for the people who are not the hands-on person. But Yeah, saving small. You have to start somewhere and keep going. I know it's hard to save, and especially now. But one of the reasons that I reached one of my savings goal within 4 months last year was because of not only the pandemic. Was it last year or was it this year? It was this year. I'm sorry. It was this year. It was income tax season. They gave out stimulus checks and then also my savings goal. So I was able to put the stimulus check straight to the side. I was able to put my savings straight to the side. My income taxes, I was able to put that straight to the side. I didn't need it for anything. I said this year, credit card debt, none. And that's what I'm working on. No credit card debt. I barely even use it for gas, which I know that I should, but
you should.
In my 100%. Mind, I was like, no credit card debt. And so I don't even want to use my credit cards, but I know that I'm going to have to get back into using them. So,
Lord,
I know this is a long episode. We could talk though.
I know, man. Because there's something else. Okay. So this last thing, I promise you, last thing, and I'll make it short.
Okay.
You mentioned something about your checking account. Whenever you put your money in your checking account or whatever is left over, you put it into your savings account and you just, you know, make it an even balance.
Yeah.
One thing that I have been telling people a lot lately, also audit your checking account, audit your bank. See exactly what your interest rates are, y'all.
Yes.
Because a lot of these banks nowadays have 0.0001% APY, which is annual percentage rate or annual percentage yield.
Yeah.
So, and just to kind of break it down into simple terms, every month, if you have money in the checking account or in the savings account, my bad. Every month, as long as you have money in the savings account, it will accrue interest. It will gain interest. So basically, as long as your money sits in a certain savings account, then it will accumulate money, interest. Yes. Mm-hmm. And like I say, because I have Bank of America, and Bank of America had, well, I have multiple banks, actually, I go with. But with Bank of America, I have, it's for a savings account, it's 0.00125 or something like that.
I can't even imagine.
So that's not even a whole penny
that you're getting,
right? So give you a little hack, a little quick hack. I had a savings account with Bank of America. I still have my checking account because it's tied to my my work or whatever. But my savings account, I ended up moving all of my money into a T-Mobile account.
Oh, yeah.
The T-Mobile money account.
Yeah.
Let me explain to you why. And I'll just break it down into simple terms. So let's just say I have $1,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I have $1,000 and I have $1,000 at my disposal, I can do one of three things. Either I can put it into a checking account where we know it won't accumulate interest.
No interest at all on a checking account.
On a checking account. I can put it into a savings account where it'll accumulate very little interest,
mm-hmm.
like 0.0 whatever.
Yeah.
Or I can put it into a money market or a CD.
Yeah.
Right? A money market account, you know, will give you a little bit more interest, maybe like, you know, I think the last rate was like 0.40% or something like that.
Yeah, it varies. 0.5, yeah.
Yeah, it varies.
0.5.
Right. Or putting it into a CD where it'll accumulate a little bit more interest.
Yeah.
Or actually, there's a fourth option, which we're not going to talk about that today. investing it, putting it into a stock market, which you can get interest from that.
Mm-hmm.
But just dealing specifically with checking accounts. So what I did was I have $1,000. I decided to transition my $1,000 into a T-Mobile money account.
Mm-hmm.
And for those who have T-Mobile, T-Mobile has an option where you're getting 4% interest.
Yes.
You know,
mm-hmm.
on your money. So that same $1,000 in within 1 year's time, that'll be how much?
$40.
$40, mm-hmm. right? So divide. So that's $40 over the course of 1 year.
But then also compounding interest that goes with
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
My point exactly.
Yeah.
So you'll get 4% interest on anything that you on whatever money that you have up to $3,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my hack is, if you have money in a savings account right now, and even at once you hit the $3,000 threshold or whatever, T-Mobile still has it at 1%.
Yeah.
Anything over $3,000, they'll have it at 1%.
Mm-hmm.
So my hack to you is, if you have a T-Mobile money account or if you have T-Mobile service, you can take advantage of that 4% interest, annual interest. Again, there's no point in having your money sitting somewhere where you're not going to accumulate interest
on it.
You know, so I moved all of my money from my Bank of America account into my T-Mobile money account.
Again, I talked about this interest on a video. I broke it down for you all. The same thing he's saying, I said that. But I I write it out for you so that it can make more sense.
Makes
to
sense.
You.
Yeah.
So I'll link it down below, or I'll iCard it right at the top of the screen so that you can go back and see that video. But it is necessary for you to understand how banks and how interest works, because it's a cycle, and you got to see it. You have
it
to
really
see
is.
It, and you have to do your research. And last but not least, which I've mentioned it before, you have to do what's best for you. But do not be stagnant. Do not be complacent.
Right.
Oh, I don't know about it, so I'm not going to figure it out. I was talking to Yanni the other day, and I told her, I watch everything. I listen to everything. I read everything. I have a whole lot of useless information, but it's not useless until I need to use it or tell somebody about it. So it may not work for me, but I can say, oh, I remember this person, and then I'm going to go do my research and send you the video so that you can see it and you can learn from it. But you have to do your research, and yep. you have to do an evaluation of your life just to make sure that you are getting the best out of everything that you need and deserve in this life.
I agree. I agree. We could go on and on about this, because
we're both over an hour.
Right. We're both extremely dedicated to fixing our to not only fixing ours, or, you know, getting ours up to par, but helping others get theirs up to
par
too.
Yes. And at this current point in time, I can assure you, if you message me and ask me a question, I am going to respond and help you. I am not charging anybody for anything, but I'm also not doing the work. I'm just telling you what I know and pointing you in the right direction.
Giving you the resources.
But I am definitely willing and open to help anybody, because I think that if I know something and I can share it with you all, that's what I'm here for. So if you reach out to me, you're going to get a response. And Eric, as well, I told you, he's the best buddy ever. I mean, this dude
will
I'm like, I don't know how to convert this music. Can you do it? Oh, no problem. I'll convert it and send it to you. And I'm like, he's just the best.
Yeah.
And I probably could have watched a video on how to convert the song into from a you. I don't know, whatever. I said, can you do it for me? He did it. He's the best. And this was a while ago, but no matter what I ask him, oh, I'll find it out for you, or no, I'll do it for you, or I'll send it to you. And I'm like, thank
That's
you
me.
So much. He's always willing to help. Always.
Because like you, I am a wealth of knowledge. I like to be able to understand how things work.
Mm-hmm.
And when I, back to the whole credit thing, I needed to understand how it works. And let me say this last thing too.
One more last thing.
There's nothing, and you know, again, no disrespect to, you know, the people hustling, you know, or let me not say hustling, but no disrespect to the people who are credit repair gurus and things like that, credit counseling services, debt consolidation, things like that. No disrespect to them. But there's nothing more rewarding than being able to do it yourself and say, damn it, I did it myself.
Yes.
I promise you, there's nothing more rewarding.
Absolutely.
That's exactly what happened to me. Because I could have went the route. I could have either filed bankruptcy. I could have, you know, went to a debt consolidation. I mean, I had those options.
Yeah.
But I said, you know what? No, I need to learn this.
Yeah.
Let me learn it. Mm-hmm. And once I learn it, I can be able to give it to other people.
Yeah.
And like I said, there's nothing more rewarding than knowing how to do something. And there's nothing more rewarding than doing it yourself. Fixing
Absolutely.
It yourself.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Well, you guys, that has been today's money episode. I don't even know what I'm going to call it.
I know, right?
I don't know. I'll figure it out. You'll see it up top. You'll see it on the description of the podcast episode. I'm not sure what I'm going to call it, but we talked about a lot. We really were just catching up, though, since the last time
we
talked.
Yeah, a lot of it we were.
And again, if we do this every month, there's going to be something we learn new, because that's just how much things change.
Yeah,
so
100%.
Again, I'm Angie of the Sincerely Angie podcast, and this is my good buddy
Eric
Lewis from the I'ma Keep Going podcast, and I'll have all of his information linked below. My information will be linked below, and follow us, and if you need any type of assistance or help, don't be afraid to reach out to us. Any parting words?
No, I mean, just keep going. That's my whole thing. And I promise you, it's not a shameless plug, y'all. I'm not plugging it. I'm just saying, you know, this was a great conversation.
Absolutely.
Obviously, it was a much needed conversation.
Absolutely.
Because there are a lot of people who ask me questions about it. Because oftentimes I'll post something on Facebook or something about you know, about finances, stock market, and stuff like that. So this is a great conversation, and hopefully this is something that kickstarts you, or at least gives you that kick in the butt to get it to want to change your life and want to fix things in your life financially. So I thank you. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate you just always being there, always being a person that's ready to have the conversation and talk. And if you've picked up on Eric's vibe, he is like the go-to person, not for assistance, but if you know that if you go to him, he's genuinely going to give you help. He's genuinely going to lead you in the right direction.
Thank you.
So, besides where I'll have all of your information right. linked below, of course, where can the people find you?
They can find me on Instagram, Eric Will Keep Going, and it's Eric Will Keep Going. Or you can go to the I'ma Keep Going website. It's imakeepgoing.com. You can sign up for the email. Pretty soon I'll start doing contests and things like that. And yeah, I mean, you can go to the podcast, I'ma Keep Going podcast. It's available on pretty much every platform, as well as my website. You can listen to it directly from my site as well. So yeah, Eric Will Keep Going, Instagram, I'ma Keep Going on Facebook, and imakeepgoing.com website.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Eric.
Thank you so much, Angie. I appreciate it, man. That was good. I appreciate it. I really do.
All right, you guys. Bye.
Peace out, y'all.
P.S. I'm back with your meme moment. And I saw this meme today, actually, on Sunday, while I'm getting ready to edit the podcast and upload it so that it can be ready for Monday morning. And I saw this particular meme and I thought that it was perfect. Okay, here we go. It says, making $70,000 per year and spending $69,500 is what keeps people broke. Someone making $45,000 per year but only spending $30,000 is richer. Wealth is created by increasing the gap between what you make and what you spend. It's not about how much you make, but how much you keep. When I saw that, I was like, this is all we were trying to say. It's about money management. It's about understanding money, your relationship with money. That's all it's about. When it boils down to it, that's truly all it's about. It's about doing what is best for you and what helps you in the long run. If you're making a certain amount and you're spending that same exact amount, you're basically living paycheck to paycheck because you're not saving. Where's your cushion? Where's your lifeline? Where's your fund or your account that says, if anything happens, I can hold you up for the next 6 to 8 months or the next year? Where's your account that says that? And that's all we're trying to get into your head. So when there are videos and posts about people who are saying that, you know, saving your money is silly and working two jobs is silly, I just need you to sit down and ask yourself what works best for you in your situation, and that will help you in the long run. But if you are trying to operate like someone who is not on the same level as you, that can put you in a bad position at the end of the day. If you want to change your relationship with money, you have to change your relationship with money. But it all starts when you make the conscious decision to say, here's what I'm going to do. And when you start to do the research, when you see yourself Googling certain things, or you start following accounts that are where you need to be or where you want to be, that's when you know that the change is coming. When you start to tell yourself no, when you start to tell other people, okay, I have something else that I'm trying to do, so no, I can't go, that is when you know that you are on the road to changing your relationship with money. And if you have a nonchalant relationship with money, your finances are going to reflect that. It's going to reflect in so many different areas of your life. You will hear multiple stories about billionaires who they don't wear all of the luxury brands. Their money is tied up other places. It's in investments, it's in stocks, it's in all kinds of things, but it's usually not in what they're wearing. And if it is in what they're wearing, you can't tell, because they're not wearing the signature brands. You won't see them with a shirt with Louis Vuitton plastered all over it. That's just not how they operate. So I'm not going to go too far, of course, but that's what I wanted to say about the meme that I saw. And overall, what we were trying to say in this podcast episode was to do what works for you and your journey. You cannot implement the exact same steps that somebody else took to get where they got, because y'all don't have the same issues. Your credit score may be way lower than what theirs is, so they can probably walk off the lot with a car if they wanted to. You can too, but you're just going to have a higher interest rate. So you have to take into consideration those factors. Also, I wanted to add something. When we spoke of the net worth calculator, I did not mention the Social Security Administration. And I know you're probably thinking, what does that have to do with anything? Well, we didn't get into the, we briefly spoke, we only mentioned Roth IRA. It's a retirement account. And we did not get into the details of it. But when you start to look at your net worth, and when you go to mysocialsecurityadministration.gov, I think it's mysa.gov. When you create the account, you can pull up your earnings record since you have been employed. Your whole work history will have, it will be listed how much you've made each year since you started working. You'll want to add up all of those years. And the reason you want to do that is because once you get all of those years added up, not only is it going to tell you what you've made over your years of working, it's also going to tell you your predicted or projected amount that they will be paying you when you retire per month. So what you have made now, there is going to be a number at the top of the page that says, when you retire at 65, your monthly earnings will be blah, blah, blah. That number is going to kick you in your ass, because if you can't live off of a certain amount right now, just imagine when you're 65, what that number is going to be. Like, let's just say your amount per month would be $2,000 per month at the age of 65. Now, granted, that may be good for some people, but if $2,000 a month is not doable for you right now in 2021, it's probably not going to be doable for you in 2045 or 2055. Cost of living is going to rise. So that's why you need to look into that. Just look into it and thank me later. So I've been working for about 20 years now. And when I add up the amount of money that I've made each year in the last 20 years, the number is astounding. It'll shake you to your core. It will be an eye opener. And that should be a grinder for you. And I don't know why I keep saying grinder. That's not like a thing. A grinder is like for food, right? Like, or whatever. But I mean, that should be something that causes you to want to grind to see that if you made $1 million in 15 years of working, that you can make $1 million in 5 years, or you can make $1 million in 1 year. That should be something as a motivator. That's the word I'm looking for. Motivator, not grinder. Grinder sounds kind of freaky, doesn't it? Yeah, that's not what I mean. That's not what I mean at all. So yeah, it will be something that causes you to grind a little bit more, and it really will shake some things up. It'll shake the table. Now, they will not give you a total how much you've made over all of the years. You'll have to add that up yourself. You'll have to calculate that yourself. But once you do calculate it and add it up, and then you look at your net worth calculator, all of these things are going to start you on a journey that is going to change the rest of your life. It is absolutely going to change the course of your life. And then one last thing I wanted to say was that when we spoke of passive income, we really just kind of spoke on how we are not opposed to passive income, and we understand what the guys were trying to say in their video. But I wanted to tell you all, passive income is basically money that you're making while you're sleeping. So if you wrote a book, or if you sell music, or if you have an online boutique, or you sell any type of product online, it's money that you are making without you doing anything. So it could be at 1-2 o'clock in the morning, somebody is buying something, you're literally making money while you're sleeping. That's a plus for most people. That really is, you know, something that is easy to do. Now, when you wake up, you may have to do the work for it, but you've made money while you were sleeping, instead of going out to a 9-to-5 and making money. There are people who have a 9-to-5 and then they have passive income on the side, money that is being made without them doing anything. And that is not something that we're against at all. It is 100% okay to have passive income. We also want you to make sure that with whatever income you are making and whatever you're doing, that you're being smart about your money making decisions. And just like I mentioned, how I could go in, get a car today or tomorrow, and the amount I used was $10,000. That $10,000 that I would take out of my account is not going to break me. There's still plenty more in my account. But my goal would be to replenish that $10,000, because, I mean, I can. I have money tied up in stocks. I have money, and I have 401k money from my job. Like, my money is not just strictly in savings. I have money in multiple places, multiple different accounts. So it's not like saving is the only option. No, we didn't even get into stocks, which we talked about that in the ownership episode. But that's all I really wanted to come back and say. So before I start rambling, let me get out of here. And don't forget, go to mysocialsecurityadministration.gov or myssi.gov. I can't remember what it is, but go to that and sign into your account, verify your information, and then look up my earnings records, and Once you pull up that sheet and you add up all of the years that you've been working and you see that number, I want you to make a change. It should make you make a change. And if you don't feel like going to my Social Security Administration, go to your net worth calculator and calculate all of your assets. And I guarantee you, your assets and your liabilities, I guarantee you, it's going to shake something in you. If it doesn't, then maybe it's just not your time. And if it's not your time, guess what? You can rest assured that there's going to be another money episode, and maybe that'll be the time. I'm hoping for you, and I'm praying for you, and I hope that you all have a great day. Happy saving!